Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and as always, I'm joined by my most excellent panel from Youngstown, Ohio, activist, author, and teacher, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Simon, thank you for that rousing introduction. It's a pleasure to be here. Glad everyone can make it. Looking forward to a rousing Sunday show.
Right. Not only are we going to fix most of the world's problems, we're probably going to create some. from the City of Angels, we have ace lawyer Peter Haven. Peter, good to have you back on the program.
Oh, likewise. It's great to be back. Look forward to creating some more problems for the world to solve today.
You were missing last week. I guess the legal eagling business has been keeping you busy.
Well, lately it just seems that there have been a crush of so-called emergencies which I've had to deal with. So I apologize for that, but I'm gonna put them all on hold for a few hours this Sunday afternoon.
Splendid, and. From the home of the pork roll, a New Jersey specialty, my good friend Bill Conrad. Bill, welcome.
Thank you, Simon. I'm so excited for today's show. I'm just, it's been a few glorious days here. It hit 83 degrees, and it's starting to cool off a little bit. It's just so gorgeous out here. I'm so ready. I got my window open, and I'm sitting in front of the computer.
Okay. I'm not sure where our favorite psychologist, Dr. Gary Penn, is, but maybe he'll be joining us later in the program. So let's press on. I love to start with something absolutely controversial. The Comcast-Time Warner merger. Personally, I think it's a horrible idea. Sam, I'll pick on you first.
Okay.
What do you think about the idea of, you know, a mega cable company becoming an even megarer cable company?
I'm totally against it, but how are you going to stop it? They probably already bought and sold the FCA people and the politicians. No one's going to block it. So I think, we better get used to being called Comtime or Timecom or whatever they're going to call themselves. And they'll just engulf, you know, there was that great movie, silent movie, with Mel Brooks, and the name of the corporation that was making the film was called Engulf and Devour. And I think that's what you call this. It's like, you know, it's like Pac-Man, you know what I mean? And all that stuff that we've all seen. I mean, I don't think any of us are surprised by it. I think it becomes less and less surprising to any of us who follow it that, you know, there's one corporate, there'll be one corporation, you know, controlling all of the cable networks and all the stuff that Comcast and Time want to go. And it's too bad that there's no Teddy Roosevelt, that guy, around to trust bust them, because the trust are back and they're bigger, better, and stronger than they've ever been. And it's too bad for the American consumer, and it's another blow to capitalism and choices.
It reminds me vaguely of the original version of Rollerball. You know, the whole world is, you know, run by one corporation.
Four corporations. He took it, the guy. If you, I saw an interview with this guy who wrote Rollerball. If you remember, there were the four countries, and from 1984, Oceania. I can't remember all. You probably know them all, Simon. The four countries that, you know, they were always at war with each other.
Right.
That's why he had four corporations. He just took that from. That's how he developed that. There was corporate America, corporate Asia, corporate Europe, and then corporate Russia, and corporate Russia, or something like that. I thought that was it. So it's the same sort of thing that was in 1984 with the four wars. The four countries always at war with one another. So.
Right, because being on a war footing is always good.
Right.
It's good for the economy.
Yeah, isn't it amazing that people literally, I mean, for years people used to think World War II was a good thing. It got us out of the Depression.
Right. Peter, I'd like you to chime in. What are your views on the Comcast-Time Warner merger?
Well, while you and Sam were talking, all I could think is we should have to modify the Pledge of Allegiance, and it should just be one corporation, indivisible, under God, with liberty and justice for all. It's funny. That's a theme that is constantly repeated in literature, this notion that in the future the world is governed just by these corporate entities. And, Orwell may have been one of the earliest pioneers of it, but it's a theme that I've seen repeated in many movies and literature, this whole notion that the world will eventually be run by mega corporations. And, it certainly seems sometimes like that's the direction we're going in. It's unclear to me whether the Comcast-Time Warner merger is actually going through or if it's just a contemplated merger. But regardless, it is, it is the way of the world, it seems. It's something that I don't know what anybody can do anything about, and I suppose I am concerned about it, but it's hard to be too concerned about something that you can't have any control over. But it just seems to me like we're heading into a world where everything is basically governed in one form or another by a dozen or so mammoth corporations. Maybe they'll be international corporations like Orwell was talking about, or maybe they'll just be industry-wide corporations, Auto Inc. or Banking Inc. or Food Supplier Inc. I don't know, but that certainly seems to be the way of the world these days.
And Bill, your opening salvo on the merger.
Well, I think it's just phenomenal that what they're going to own when they're all through. I mean, I looked at to see that Comcast already owns all the NBC channels, and Time Warner owns Turner Broadcasting and all those other channels. And I'm thinking that there won't be any commercials on TV about the cable companies dropping the network. I don't know if you have them all the time, but they're always talking about dropping particular networks. Well, if they own all the networks, they're going to keep all the networks on all the cable systems, so there'll be no campaigns about who gets to keep the channels, because they're all going to be all owned by the same cable company when we're all through. So, it is what it is, They're going to have an awful lot of power. They keep eating up, telephone companies and everything else along the way. It's just going to be one media company, right?
Right.
And maybe we won't be able to talk about them anymore because they'll own Blog Talk Radio as well.
Oh, my Lord. What a...
Holy crap, right?
Bill, you brought up a great point, because I remember, right, and I never even thought about that, but I do remember, I think it was Time Warner in New York City was thinking about dropping a station because it wasn't, and they were blacking out something, and it was really a shakedown.
Yep.
I don't know if it was the TV I forget who was shaking down who, but it definitely was a shakedown.
And yeah, we get those commercials all the time. One time was Nickelodeon, and then it was the Weather Channel, and then it's the local affiliates, and if they own them all, they won't drop them.
Look at how difficult it will be. Think about if they control when they start controlling pay-per-view sports. But I can't see that with the salaries going up the way they are and the cost escalating, that eventually there's no way we're going to have free sports on television. Well, literally, you don't. You pay for cable television. So, I mean, right? I mean, we really, you know, if I'm watching a football game on NBC, I'm still paying my cable bill every month, and my cable bill's putting some of that money towards NBC. So I'm really not watching free football because I'm paying for cable television. If I didn't have cable television, I would have horrible, you know, I'd have the old rabbit ears like Simon has with a piece of tinfoil on it and things of that nature. I would not be... then I'd have free television, but I wouldn't have television because it would be terrible reception.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, we all are. There's nothing for free as far as, I mean, like, people think NBC, CBS, and ABC are free. They forget that they're paying for it through the cable. You know, and of course they're paying for it with the advertising and how much money it costs to go buy all the stuff and this and that. But, Peter, you bring up a great point. You know, Auto Inc., Pharma Inc., Big Food Inc., but heck, I wouldn't doubt pretty soon if lawyers start getting bought up and there'll be Legal Inc.
Well, that's funny. Funny you should say that. I don't think you're wrong, although I did a quick search on the Internet, and apparently the names of the countries were Oceania, Eurasia, and East Asia. Those were the apparently three corporations.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, thanks.
Well,
Thank you.
I don't know. Who knows if you could trust what's on the Internet? But, you know, your point is well taken. There's already a movement afoot, just so everybody knows. There's a movement afoot in legal circles to basically have the equivalent of, an HMO for legal matters, an LMO or whatever you want to call it. And pursuant to these legal HMOs, that's the only phrase I can think of that, you know, makes sense. You purchase the service, you pay a certain amount of dollars per month, and you get some sort of unlimited or some sort of free phone calling time. Maybe they'll write you a few letters. Lots of people think that, you know, if they get a letter from an attorney, that's golden. That will scare the adversary into doing something. And you get these sort of services that you pay for per month. And it's apparently growing in popularity.
So it would be like you would be paying like a retainer.
You literally pay per month. It's like legal insurance, and it provides a certain amount of service. And then after that, you have to hire a lawyer to do more work, but they'll try to refer you to somebody or something. Blah blah blah.
And that will just expand. I'm not surprised.
When it gets really big and two people have the same legal HMO, so to speak, and what happens if they get in dispute with each other and they pick up the phone and they say, I want you to write me a letter to this guy, and then they call another attorney in the same firm because, you know, it's some big place staffed by, you know, hundreds of people answering phone calls, and the other guy writes the letter going back. It'll be interesting to see if that ever results in some sort of conflict of interest.
I have a theory. You know, is it possible that Sibelius has resigned from Obamacare to set up Obama Law?
My short answer to your question is no, I don't think so. But it was only a matter of time before we talked about that.
Can I just chime in here? I think that you could also have a problem where the maintenance organizations could actually be separated by classes. So if you put a certain premium type legal representation and your fees are at the right price, then the people who don't have the money would end up having to subscribe to the cheaper version of the legal things. And
yeah,
so
that would be terrible. That's very different than the way it is now, isn't it?
Well, you know, guys...
But now you're part of a group.
Group legal insurance. On the word insurance, I don't know if... I'm really curious to see if this is happening to the other three guests, panel members, excuse me. Every day now, my wife and I get a letter from our water company, gas line, supplying company, and electric company. I take it off the three utilities, telling us that they're now offering us insurance on our lines. For an extra $1.50 a month, they will guarantee us if something breaks, they'll pay it, you know, because, and they're even expanding into the water company, even want to insure my hot water tank. And I'm thinking, well, what do I have health insurance for, you know? But that's what they're trying to do, an electric company and the gas. Everybody seems to be getting on the insurance kick, including on my utility companies. And it's amazing, you know, like for 99 cents a month, and, you know, we'll do this, this, and this. But it's not a supplemental thing. Because when you read the fine print, if my house insurance covers the loss, they won't pay out diddly squat. But that's in real, real, real fine print at the bottom.
Okay, but this has been around for a gazillion years. One that comes to mind is Sears Roebuck. You walk into Sears and you buy a washing machine, and you know, do you want the extended warranty? Yeah, isn't it the same thing, Sam?
I don't know if you can get extended warranties on a water pipe that breaks. You know what I mean? But because I don't own who owns the pipe? I don't own the pipe out there. I don't own the water pipe that puts water into that delivers water and sewage to the my house and the others. I wish I did, but I don't. I don't own the telephone. I don't own the electric lines either, or the telephone or the electric lines either. So I understand what you're saying. You're right, to a certain extent, but it's like splitting hairs. It's just they're just trying to scare people to say, "Hey, look, look, we're offering this new service for our utility, for our gas lines, our water line, your gas line, actually their gas line, their water line, their electric line. And if something should happen out of the extraordinary, you'll be glad that you got insurance with us for $1.50 a month." Because we're going to replace XYZ, and when you start shifting through the policy, they ain't going to do diddly squat if your insurance company picks it up, and you just wasted $50 a year putting money in their pocket.
Right.
Okay.
You know, that's Sam's way of saying it's the exact same thing.
The what?
Well, let me throw something out here. I'll tell you what's going on here in the East Coast here. On the East Coast, you're only my house. I am liable from the shutoff valve that's usually between the sidewalk and the street up to the house. So if my pipe breaks from the shutoff valve to the house, I am responsible for the excavation and the repair of that particular part of the water line. If I am responsible for any wiring that goes from the outside telephone box, the little gray box on there, into the house, and I'm responsible from the meter on the way in. If you live in a newer subdivision, they've tried not to put some of these things on all the houses. So there's a big green box out behind a bush somewhere, and the people in that subdivision are responsible from that green box up to their house. So what's happening more and more is they're trying to take the repairs further and further from your house and make everyone responsible for their own service. And so that's where you're buying your insurance for there and throughout your house.
Even if it's their fault, and you can be proven that it's their fault because the green box is 60 feet from your property, poor Bill, you got to pay no matter what, even though okay.
It depends on what they've negotiated in the township.
It sounds like we need more public insurance adjusters out there working for the little guy.
There you go. Well, even so, our telephone services now, you get cable service, and now you're responsible for the electricity, where the carriers used to be responsible for the electricity to keep telephone service. Now they converted over to fiber optic, and now they're not going to provide the power that keeps your dial tone up. Instead, it's the responsibility of inside your house. So you're paying to keep all the utilities going, and it's everything inside the house is your responsibility unless you buy that policy. Pretty smart, huh?
Pretty greedy.
Welcome to capitalism.
Yes. It's all about greed.
Sounds like we all need Peter Haven's legal HMO service. Peter, get to work on this.
Yeah, I'm happy to provide that service to everybody. It'll only cost you $25 a month, and I'll give you an hour's worth of free phone time per month per problem.
do you get good phone?
Pardon me?
No, but you could you see everybody?
I'm not sure
Peter,
I like where that comment was going.
I could see if it was that cheap, $25 a month, you know how many people would probably sign up for it?
Yeah.
Well, look,
I'd do it for
$25 a month, and let me tell you something. You really get a lot of great advice if you actually just sit down and listen to what an attorney will tell you, if the attorney is motivated solely by looking out for what's best for you. Because most disputes are, in my opinion, overblown and over-litigated, and most people will save a lot of time, money, and aggravation if they just try to be reasonable about something, and sometimes it helps just to hear it from a third-party voice.
Simon, with all the talent we have on this show, you could probably buy a bundled program. We could get the therapy from, you know, from Gary, and we could get the legal from
what's his
from
name?
Peter, and we could get the I don't know if we would get we get some sort of fantasy views into heaven from Sam. I'm not sure what I have to offer at this point.
I'm getting antagonized. Call up Sam.
Bill, you're spoiling for a fight. I mean...
and what would happen all day long is I would antagonize Peter, and then Peter would get all these calls, and he'd have to send me nasty letters.
Yeah, that's great. That's perfect. Right. That fits right in the business model.
Okay, good one.
That's the third one this week.
I want to go back to the Comcast Time Warner story.
Oh, that's right. Oh. We were talking about that.
All right.
Simon, I heard they were merging. Is that correct?
Okay, here's the scoop. There was a hearing by the Congressional Committee on, I don't know, pork rolls or something this week. And there was something I saw on the TV this morning. Comcast has over 100 registered lobbyists in Washington. Comcast has contributed funds to virtually every senator. Now, the amounts vary. The top winner has scored $54,000 in the last decade, and the loser something like $5,000. So, Senate hearing, no one wants to poo-poo Comcast. I mean, they're too big a company to, go up against. Yeah, they represent money. And this bothers me. It bothers me greatly. I don't like lobbyists at the best of times, but... You know, this is the original hedging your bets idea, right? If we, throw a few bones to everyone, then everyone is going to like us. Quite frankly, I don't think that's the way that, the country should be run.
It's not the way it should be run, but it's the way the world is.
Okay, but can we fix it?
Yes. Start a revolution, and that's the only way you're going to fix it. Peter's 100% right. The last time someone in power actually took on the trust and busted them up, well, would have been AT&T getting busted up to the baby bells, which didn't take that long to come Bell again, right, or AT&T. Remember they all busted up, there were all sorts of baby bells? So that took place in the late 80s. But before that, you'd have to go back to, like I said earlier, Teddy Roosevelt. He broke up the railroad trust and the other trust, and they ended up, getting rid of him as president. Remember, he served up McKinley's term, won one term on his own, was going to run again, and they ran William Howard Taft, as Bill would call him, the Chris Christie of his day, against, you guys know who William Howard Taft is? He was so fat they had to buy a special bathtub for him in the White House.
Yeah.
That's the joke. Okay. All right. So anyway, the money trust led by J.P. Morgan were pissed off at Teddy Roosevelt, and they bounced him off out of Republican nomination. He ran as a third-party candidate called the Bull Moose. And as soon as Howard Taft got back into at the presidency, all the reforms that Roosevelt brought to Wall Street, the banking industry, and this and that were thrown out. And that's when you have the beginning of the Fed and all that wonderful stuff going on. But it's a pretty interesting time if you ever read about it, because the deal maker back then in American politics was a guy named Senator Marcus Hanna from my state of Ohio. And when McKinley, who was ran for president before he got assassinated, and they were picking a vice president, Roosevelt was the governor of New York and had reformed a lot of things in New York. And that's who Hanna didn't want anybody but him, because he knew if he ever became president, he would bring all these reforms in. And that was the type of guy he was. And lo and behold, that guy assassinated McKinley in Buffalo, and Roosevelt, true to his word, got in there and walked softly and carried a big stick on domestic policy, too. Fascinating guy, because he was afraid to take on. He wasn't afraid to take on big everything. Anyway, that's my little history lesson about it. But that's what you need, Simon. You need a revolution, grassroots revolution that would overthrow, which is not going to happen. There's probably a better chance of a revolution than a man or woman getting elected president of the United States, bringing the right men and women in with him or her, and then starting to bust up all the stuff. I think you got a better chance of having a revolution than you do of what I just said. Anybody disagree with me?
No, no one disagrees with you.
I'm sad. I'm saddened by that comment.
And Peter,
Sam's right.
I hate this whole lobbying idea. And as I recall, didn't the Supreme Court make a ruling recently, basically making it completely unregulated?
I don't recall precisely what the Supreme Court ruled, but I think that the Supreme Court, to my recollection, just simply said that a corporate entity is considered a person for purposes of these laws and rules governing lobbying and whatnot. And I think that's what the Supreme Court said, and I apologize if there was something else going on there. But that ruling in and of itself doesn't surprise me. I'm not aware of any other ruling by the Supreme Court on that particular issue.
Simon, are you talking about Citizen United or the one that just happened where they said a limit on contributions is unconstitutional?
Right. That's the one I'm
talking
about.
That just happened,
about,
right?
The limit.
Yeah.
What was that case about?
To have limits on campaign contributions is unconstitutional, violation of free speech.
Well,
it just happened.
I'm going to have to look that one up.
Yeah, I think it just happened, Simon, in the last week, 10 days?
Yeah.
It kind of snuck through because CNN wasn't covering it.
Yeah, they're too busy pinging.
And Fox was covering something else, and MSNBC was... No, Fox was covering... What were they covering?
Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin and Rick Perry. And C-SPAN was covering the ping, the pong, and the and that. And MSNBC was covering the success of 7 million people signed up for Obamacare. No one paid attention to what the Supreme Court did.
Right.
Yeah, I think the basis of the court's ruling is since there's no limit on what a person can spend or contribute, then therefore there's no limit on what bigger companies can spend or
contribute.
Peter,
how happy do you think the Koch brothers and George Soros was when all that money they spent sent to the Supreme Court got them that victory?
Well, I don't know. In practice, when, you know, everybody can spend unlimited amounts, then everyone can spend unlimited amounts, and it just goes back to, here we are again, corporations can divide and conquer because at the end of the day, in our current world, the way it's presently constituted, economic might is the most, important survival character trait in the world today, right now. And I don't know if that's going to change or not, but this is a byproduct of capitalist democracy. This is what you get.
Okay, Bill, I keep dragging you back to this Comcast story, and I apologize. I promise this is the last one. Rumor has it that if the Time Warner Comcast merger goes through, the new company will have a cable monopoly in 2/3 of the nation's cable marketplace. This doesn't sound like a good thing to me. In fact, it sounds horrible. With no competition, that they can charge what they want, when they want. Do you have any thoughts on that?
One of my concerns has always been that you are limited based on your location on who's going to provide cable TV to yourself. If you're in a town that Comcast serves, then you got Comcast. If you're in a town that Time Warner serves, you got Time Warner. If you the only competition that you have to cable TV right now, at least in my area, is Verizon Fios. So, I don't think the cable TVs compete much with each other, except when there's a contract renewed time in particular locations, and most of the time they don't change because it just costs too much to make those changes unless you get a whole lot of new areas in which you acquire. But that being said, I'm against anything that makes it so it is uncompetitive. I think that the only thing that I ever heard them say that made absolutely no sense to me was that if they merge, then they have the ability to provide internet faster. And like, what does that mean? You order cable TV and they're out 3 to 5 days, and you get it either works the first time they install it or it works within a week. And like, what are we, I don't think the competition between the cable companies really exists anyway. I think that they're in league with each other, and they're trying to make this one company. But who Comcast and Warner, fighting against? I mean, are they competing with Fios? Are they afraid that if they don't do this, that the Google networks are going to spread the rest of the United States?
Hey, Bill, you're
I know they're up to something, but I.
And the cable company is cutting in and altering your communication, as far as I can tell.
Right.
You were breaking up there for a minute.
Yeah, Bill was breaking up. I think Comcast was after
the cable company and the surveillance and the drones. They detected your hostile words towards them, so they intentionally started breaking up your communication.
It was nice knowing you, Bill.
Who's your phone provider?
I'm sorry.
No, that's not your fault. You were exercising freedom of speech and...
Does that explain the black SUVs out in front of my house right now?
Yes,
please. These guys don't use black SUVs. They got satellites. They just nuke you from above. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
But they still can't find the plane.
Is there an unmarked van with no windows?
No, it's marked.
No.
No license plates.
I see the license plates spinning there. Different states keep showing up on the front.
Okay. I want to move on. There was a truly ugly story this week. The mass stabbing at a school. And I'm not trying to make light of it, but do you think the NKA, the National Knife Association, will follow the NRA's lead? Knives don't kill people. People kill people. Who wants to pick up on that one?
Well, I don't think there is a National Knife Association, is there? Are you serious?
No, I wasn't serious.
I always thought it was a made-for-TV organization, sort of like, you know, Ginsu Knife and what's that green thing that where you can cook an egg and you can blow it out of the pan. I thought that that's who the National Knife Association was.
No, in my opinion, this will be used by the NRA and by gun manufacturers, who are just another example of the great corporations that we've been talking about, to argue that every citizen should be armed, and that, you know, you need to carry firearms into these schools because, or have armed security guard personnel there because you might have some crazy guy with a knife. Now, never mind what happens if you have crazy disturbed people who have access to firearms, but that's the spin that I think people will take on this. And you know, what can you do? How can you argue with people who believe that? There's not much you can say.
Well, is there like a National Stick Association? So, like, if people carry around pointed sticks, is there an association that says it's okay to carry around pointed sticks?
I think what needs to be done is they need to implement the same kind of – I mean, I personally think we're heading towards a place where, you know, when you go on an airplane, there's screening that takes place. When I go into a courthouse, there is screening that takes place. I think what we're heading toward is a world where there is this screening process that takes place, you know, before you enter – many types of public establishments, whatever they may be. And, you know, I can tell you that, you know, you all know how it works at airlines. You have to show up, you know, an hour in advance because you've got to plan on these various screenings. And when I go to court, you know, it's not as bad some days, but on many days, you know, you have to get there in advance because, you know, the screening process can take a while. And I think that's you know, if we keep having incidents in public places where people are killed by any method in any way, there's going to have to be some sort of screening procedure implemented, in my opinion.
And Sam, you and I go back a long ways. I remember the good old days of air travel. You turned up at the airport, you flashed your ticket, and, you know, you got on the aeroplane. Yeah, those days are long gone. I miss them. How about you?
Of course. Well, yeah, I think things change. Times do. I mean, we all know that the terrorists who are constant war with us have used planes as their major their weapon of choice, for lack of a better phrase, ever since they started hijacking them and using them. Then we had the 911. Then we had the shoe bomber. Then we had the shoe bomber didn't come across on a bus or anything else, or walk into a mall and click his heels. The underwear bomber was on a plane. And I think that's so we responded to that with the TSA, although I think that needs a lot of work and there is a lot of crazy things that go on with that. I think Peter's 100% right. That's the security that has to happen from to keep people safe and in the planes, or they're not going to fly. And you know, corporations got to in the countries that own these airplanes got to they've got to make money, and they got to make money by making sure that they're safe. And another way they got to make it safe is by making me feel secure. And so yeah, do you miss walking on the the tarmac and getting up on the little plane things without running through the now you don't even go on those. And does anybody get in the tarmac anymore and have to walk up those crazy stairs to get onto the top of the plane? Does that even happen anymore?
No.
No, you go to the gate, right? You walk right in, you don't even see, you walk right into the gate, has that little tunnel, and it hooks up, and it's in the suction cup, and it sucks, and it's right up against the, the plane, and you get in. And
sometimes when you catch certain flights, or you connect
I haven't flown in a lot. I don't. It's cheaper for me to drive when I go to New York because when you fly, you still have to get there 2 hours in advance. For me to drive to New York to visit the kids and the grandkids, it's 6 hours driving, which is basically 4 hours driving to the airport to wait in line to be patted down. To wait for your luggage, then take a cab. So it's better for us to drive. But that's just us. But I understand, people fly, and I mean, look at the changes in the fee. Look how much money they're making on. I mean, do you remember when people used to bring in, suitcases that were the size of grand pianos to try to stick over in the overhead compartment? They didn't want to wait for at the carousel. And now, of course, now the airline changed all that. But I want to go back to what you brought up, even though you're poking fun at it, about this kid at the school. The school is only about an hour and a half from me. And it appears the issue more to me isn't about knives in this case or guns. It's about bullying. And as a substitute teacher who's been around at a lot of school districts in the last couple months, luckily I have not seen it. However, I have talked to other teachers, administrators, and kids about it and how it happens and when it happens. It's a lot worse than I thought it was. And that's the thing that that's an item that I hope that this educational system, the parent support system, whatever, really starts to get their arms around, because it's going to get worse. Because the bullying. Yes, we all dealt with it as kids in different ways. I'm sure everybody on this panel has been bullied and picked on and what have you. But today it's even worse than it was when we were kids. And if you remember the horrible feeling it had on you when it happened to you, you forget about it as we get older. We're in our business. We have our families. The one thing you forget about is things of that nature until it hits you square in the forehead. And that's one thing I think, as a part-time educator, I'd like to see more people address, because what it's coming down to, these kids are snapping, obviously, and to the point that they would bring a kitchen knife in. I thought he had a Bowie knife or something, really, or a fishing knife or a hunting knife, which are, so sharp. He had just a regular kitchen knife. I don't think it was one of those ones you saw on Saturday Night Live that could cut through a plane that Dan Aykroyd used to do. But, he was able in 15 minutes to stab 20 people, and some of them severely. I just think that, that's the one thing we really have to focus on is the bullying aspect that's out of control for some of these kids and make these kids snap.
Okay. I have to ask you this question. Mm-hmm. You are a teacher, and you go from school to school. Think back to when you and I were kids. Yep, there was always the class bully. But somehow we dealt with them.
Yeah, go ahead. I want to hear your full question. I don't want to interrupt you. How we deal with the class bully? When I grew up and others, once a class bully came in, they were outnumbered and out flanked and out muscled and out hustled and out thought and whatnot. They didn't last that long. Now, maybe I was unique. Maybe I grew up in a unique circumstance, but the school system I grew up in, the college I went to and all that, yeah, there were some creeps. They didn't last that long. They were outnumbered very quickly. Kids ran. Kids in those days kind of really stuck together, at least in my community, and maybe I'm an exception to the rule. But now I notice the bullier is the fun guy. It's the one. It's picking on the person more fun than standing up to the bully. That's just what I've noticed in my little experience, my own personal experience. Those of them with my children who are now in their late 20s, they had the same sort of thing I did. Again, we live in the same community. If someone was a bully, he was met with a lot of other people. You know, it didn't last that long. And maybe I've been lucky in my experiences along with my children, my wife and her. I mean, people stood up and didn't take it, and that bully didn't last that long. And also, back then, at least we forget, if a bully did sneak through the system, the kids, you still had to deal with a pretty tough administration and teachers who could paddle back then, who could suspend you. And the punishment, you didn't have to worry about getting sued. They didn't have to worry about getting parents freaking out on them. They could come down on a kid who deserved to come down on. That's not the case now, and it seems to me what I've experienced, what I've read and whatnot, is the kids, the taunting is just incredible. Again, from what I've heard and what I've read, it's more fun to be on the side pointing the finger at the wimpy kid than it is to stand up for the wimpy kid.
Okay, but really the question is, has bullying become more prevalent in the in recent years? Or
my opinion, I want to hear what the other guys have to say. Yes, because of the social network and how they can do it.
Right, and Peter, I'm going to go to you. Any comments?
Well. In my opinion, it's an unfortunate fact of life that whatever aspect of human behavior exists, you know, given our evolution and the advent of technology and the access to greater and greater means to accomplish anything, it's like every aspect of life, human life on this planet, our ability to engage in it, I think it's an innate character trait, bullying or whatever you want to call it. I think it's an innate character trait. And humans have a tendency to want to do it, and humans have a tendency to establish hierarchies and establish groups, and this behavior is one of the ways that manifests itself. And I think that when the ability to engage in the behavior gets amplified by technology, then you see more dramatic manifestations of the behavior, in my opinion. You know, before, if you were younger and you were subject to bullying, maybe people took your lunch money, or maybe they, you know, locked you in a girl's bathroom or the opposite sex bathroom or whatever it is. We live in a world now where kids play video games where they shoot each other and kill each other in various ways. We live in a world now where movies glorify not just violence, but also the accumulation of firearms. You know, I watch movies and, you know, there's always a scene in a movie where, you know, they come upon somebody and he seems to be some sort of, whatever mild assuming character, whatever, but suddenly he reveals that he has an absolute arsenal of weaponry at his disposal. And that's glorified. That's perceived as, wow, what a great guy he is. And, we just live in and social media, of course, amplifies this because now you have the ability to observe people in social media, bully them in social media, stalk them in social media, manipulate social media for any of these purposes. It's a crazy world. And I think that the amplification of all these things leads to these, horrific displays and these horrific incidents. And it's a combination of many factors coming together, and sorry to say it, but it seems like it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Bill, I know you have a son, Joshua, I believe his name is. Did you or your son ever experience bullying?
Yeah, my son's name's Jonathan.
I'm sorry.
I think that everyone's had a little bit of bullying. I don't think it was to the extent of what we see on television. I'm sure that certain amount of bullying takes place, but I think that for the most part, the kids understand that the parents and the administration are a little overboard on what constitutes bullying, because saying a bad thing about somebody sometimes is misconstrued into bullying as opposed to, you know, just stating the obvious of somebody else's behavior. So they're very cautious about saying things because they're afraid that it's going to be misconstrued and blown out of proportion. What's happened here is I think that probably what goes on in the minds of these children that do this is that they say, well, you know what, if I just kind of get back at a person that's pushing me around, it may not be the end of it, but if I can kind of blow this out of proportion and cause a great disturbance that's going to be all over social media, you know, what's the point in doing something in a mediocre way when I can make it so everybody else knows what happened, and I can, you know, I can try to push the envelope to say, look, this guy's a bully and I couldn't take it anymore. And, you know, you're now talking about a whole nation that's going to possibly be on his side or the other person's side. Whereas before, it's like, you know, sometimes I'd see people that would get bullied and they would go and tell an administrator, and the administrator didn't take their side. They took the bully's side for whatever the reason. Here you now have a whole nation who can possibly be on your side, and I think they're taking advantage of all this media coverage. We never knew what used to take place in Mississippi or Ohio unless it was such a great disaster. Now people are pushing it, you know, can I make CNN or Fox News show up at my back door? The answer is maybe you can now.
You know, in my youth, I remember someone trying to bully me, and he was bigger than I was. I beat the living crap out of him. That stopped that right then and there.
but in today's society, that could turn on you, Simon. You know, you could say that, you know, you were taunting him and then you beat him up. You know?
Right.
And you'd have been the bad guy.
Yeah. We didn't go to teachers and administrators. You know, the kids dealt with it at the kid level. And, you know, maybe what's happening today is that it's been taken to a new level, and suddenly, you know, more dangerous aspects come in. Sam, would you agree with that?
I think we, being older, and I know what I can do on a social network. We all know what we can do as far as advertising, connecting with old friends, and this and that. I'm amazed. But these kids use it as a they can use it as a fun tool or an abusive tool. I guess this rumor mongering thing and getting kids and setting stuff on this social network, and it spreads like wildfire. Whereas in the past, it might have, in our day, maybe it took a year to get a bad reputation. I don't know. You know, depending on what the reputation is, happens overnight. Overnight happens in 5 seconds, and then the kid doesn't have time to take a couple deep breaths, relax. Friends gather around, they just snap. And I think that's what you have to realize. It moves so quickly, so suddenly, and if it's the wrong thing at the wrong time, as they say, then the kid will pick up a kitchen knife, two knives, and run to school and get his frustrations out. You know, it happens. And so it is probably really super vicious when these kids decide to be. On the flip side of the coin, of course, is that there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of support out there too, and maybe these kids will rally around and a lot less happen. But when it does happen, it must be pretty vicious to want to go grab two kitchen knives. I mean, you know, to go actually not fantasize about it, but to actually go grab two kitchen knives out of your home, bring them to school, and start swinging the knives around. It's pretty scary if you think about it.
One of the other things that kind of surprised me is that there was nothing about the security guard that got stabbed. There was no notice that he was the one that was the person able to defuse the situation. So even hiring the security guard out there to try to prevent these kind of situations, it still fell through the cracks. And the security guard, in a sense, seemingly had no influence to stop it. Now, maybe I'm reading more into it than that.
Well, you know what happened is this is a different one. What they did is he struck right before, while the kids were all congregating before the doors opened. You know, it was one of the few nice days we've had around here recently. So all the kids were outside milling around, and he just started his rampage. The classes were in session, and then you had someone pulled the fire alarm. And people saw blood everywhere, and they just turned into, you know, panic. As we all know, that's the worst thing that can happen. People just start, as much as they tell you in the schools, okay, when there's a tornado or a fire, please walk. During the drill, everybody behaves wonderfully. The minute they see the tornado, and I rightfully so, the minute you see the tornado, the knife-wielding assassin, or the fire, people panic because it's about survival. And they run. And when they start running, people get trampled, and it's a nightmare. And I think what happened, luckily, this assistant principal happened to be there because he's the one who tackled the kid when he wasn't blindsided him and stopped him from really, really doing some more damage and carnage. Because people were running past him because someone had pulled a fire drill, and people saw blood in the hallway. So, yes, I agree with you, Bill. There was a security guard there. That was the first guy he stabbed. So if he would have had access to firearms, that would have been the first guy he shot, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, your point is well taken.
And Peter, were you ever bullied, other than by me?
Oh, I suppose so. I was probably bullied a little bit. Not much. I was always kind of a big kid. I was teased a lot, but everybody's teased a lot, and I don't know to what extent teasing is qualifies as bullying. I suppose it's the same thing. Nothing really sticks out in my mind as being particularly egregious, but, you know, when you're a young person, those kinds of public spectacles or displays, they can have a they can have a real traumatizing effect on you. I'm not sure what happened here. I don't know if this guy suddenly snapped from bullying or something else, but you know, to me, these human behaviors and human emotions are just they're a constant, and the only thing we can do is try to control the ability of people to be able to lash out when they're feeling hurt or whatever they're feeling. And I don't know how we do that other than the ways we've talked about.
Okay, let's move on. And whoever is doing the porno movie soundtrack in the background, please stop. I like CNN. I might be completely wrong. Maybe I should be watching MSNBC or Fox, but I don't. I just like CNN. Flight 370. I did a highly unscientific study yesterday. I decided to spend 10 minutes and sample how many times they managed to get the word ping, pinger, and pinged, you know, into the segment. And it was 14 times. So, you know, ping turned up every minute. In my opinion, ping could well be the you know, word of the year for 2014. And Sam, are we pinged out?
Ponged out. Ping, pong. yeah, I stopped watching CNN. I mean, it's just amazing to me. We've talked about this, you know, the poor, you know, the family members and this and that, and, you know, I think we've covered every, we've done just as good a job as all the experts who get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars on CNN to come up with ideas of what the hell happened. And I think the question is, you know, it's more of why it happened than of what the hell happened. And, yeah, I mean, CNN, go away. I mean, I just go to, you know, change the coverage. I feel bad for the families. It's worse. The worst part is what happened, why it happened, and all that. No one will ever know, it appears. And unless this plane appears out of somewhere, some really crazy, plot that has been kidnapped, has been retrofitted, hostages, and is going to come out of nowhere, then it's lying at the bottom of the ocean somewhere. And when I hear that, when we think about that, as we talked about last week, why won't one of our nuclear submarines with all that capability and incredible technology be over there looking for it, as opposed to 17 ships, 4 satellites, 12 helicopters, 11 life raft, 2 cops and a rowboat? I mean, enough is enough.
I mean, Peter, are you pinged out?
Well, no, I'm not pinged out. I don't really watch television news very much, but, you know, this is the nature of news coverage. Whenever something becomes topical, they focus on it, and they focus on it for as long as they perceive it to be topical, or they perceive it to be an issue, or probably stating the matter differently, they focus on it until something else happens which blows that item off the front pages, so to speak, and something else takes its place. And right now, there is this mystery about this airline flight and precisely what happened and where it crashed, assuming that everyone believes it crashed, and trying to find it. And that just happens to have been the aspect of the search this week, the notion that the black box is running out of battery life, and the only way they have of detecting it now is searching for these pings that it emits. And it's the last dying gasp of the story, in my opinion. And now that it appears that the time period to detect these pings has expired, because the batteries are probably lost, depleted, I think it's done and over with as far as that aspect of the story. But this is just the way the news plays out, and until another topical item supplants it, that's just going to be the news story of the week. But I think it's over and done with. I think it was a last week issue, and now they'll move on to something else.
Bill, any thoughts on pingers?
Yeah, they've over... use the word ping, and it's like they say, the batteries have probably worn out. Again, the thing that just dumbfounds me is with all this technology, there must be somebody who has some kind of a map of the seafloor, and when you drop something in the ocean as big as a jet, you would think that the bottom of the ocean would look differently from comparing maps to the actual what's on the bottom of the ocean. So I'm just very confused on how we couldn't find it over the radar. We send planes to try to find out what might have happened underwater. It just seems like we're doing the wrong thing to try to find it, and we're just proving again that that either there's a conspiracy there, or we just don't know how to find things we lose. I mean, that's crazy.
Oh, okay.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, there may be some sort of conspiracy afoot. I don't know, but it doesn't surprise me that a plane can be lost in the ocean. People, I mean, the world is a huge place, and the ocean is largely an undiscovered country. I mean, there are people who believe we've done more to explore space than we have our own ocean floor, and a lot of that has to do with a difficulty in just getting to the bottom of some of these places. You know, the pressures are so intense that it doesn't surprise me at all that an object could have disintegrated and been, fractured into a million pieces, and we could never find it. It's finding a needle in a haystack would be easier than finding a broken up airliner in the middle of a deep ocean, in my opinion. But that still doesn't rule out the possibility of a conspiracy theory.
Oh, and there's lots of them out there.
I think the conspiracy theory has to be considered one of the plots here until something is discovered that, hey, it went down, and here's the proof that it went down, and brings closure. I mean, it's either it's crashed, or it's a conspiracy theory, or it is a plot from, or it is an alien. I guess you can consider that as the conspiracy theory. But
we just threw out the A word, alien. That's it.
Only because it mirrors close encounter. I understand the ocean's a big place and down at the bottom, but like we talked about, Peter, when you went on, call James Cameron. The guy had all the equipment from to get the Titanic. I knew they pinpointed where it went down. It had crashed. But they had all that equipment from Woods Hole. And we've got all these ships and all these military and all these stuff, and they couldn't identify. It was amazing.
Well, just consider this. The Titanic, A, we knew roughly where it went down. B, it was a relatively contained mass when it sank. It may have split into one or two pieces, but it was a relatively contained solid mass. This plane may have completely disintegrated. What are you supposed to find? I mean,
that's a good point. I mean, but didn't some satellite image allegedly are supposed to have the best in the world? And then comes the great question. With our technology, our satellites, our NSA, our this. They would have picked up something, but maybe they can't admit that we have that sort of technology to do that. But then it's going to be, we don't want, we have to stay one step ahead of the Joneses, so to speak, as far as technology, spying, and this and that, especially with all the stuff that Snowden's come out with, or the bleeding heart bug, or is that what it's called, heart bleed bug, Simon? Is that the
one?
That's
funny.
Yep.
I just heard about this heart bleeding bug the other day.
Yep.
That's pretty scary.
It is. I mean, so all this stuff's come out, and maybe we live in this time because everyone's so top secret, hush hush. They don't want we might know what this plane is, we might know what happened to it, but we can't share because we don't want the quote unquote bad guys, since we are in a new Cold War, to know what we have. And maybe that's one reason why Vlad the Putin gave Snowden asylum. I think that has to be looked at. I just feel bad for two groups here. The families associated with those that are lost, the giant question mark, and anybody who used to like to watch CNN. You're suffering the most.
Well, I think there's a third victim there, CNN themselves, because you have people that don't watch CNN anymore, so they've lost a lot of money too.
Yeah, okay, good point. Self-inflicted wounds.
There you go. But
okay.
And again, 20% of the plane is flotation device. Now, even if this thing blew up, something should have floated up to the top of the water. You know,
well,
I don't
again,
get it.
Something can float to the top of the water, but just, you know, being able to see it or find it is a completely different question. And you know, I mean, it's very hard to spot these things anywhere, much less on the ocean. You know, you've got a surface that reflects light, and that, you know, there are waves and it's uneven. And I can't even begin to imagine how hard it would be to try to find debris from a broken aircraft, disintegrated, if that's what happened, in a vast area of the ocean, and you don't know precisely where it went down. And even if you can get a rough sense of where it went down, this debris, whatever it may be, it's not going to stay together for very long. A lot of it's going to sink. A lot of it's going to disperse through ocean currents and whatnot. I mean, I can't even imagine how difficult a task it must be. I don't think it's that easy at all. But, you know, I don't think we're ever going to get any answers to these questions. It's sad, and I feel sorry for the families, because they're always going to cling to some sense of hope, because when it's unresolved, it's unresolved. But, you know, it's just tragic.
I want to change gears completely. Let's talk politics, because we all love the subject. Sibelius has resigned. Or was she pushed? Sam, I'll start with you.
Well, I thought it was hilarious. I don't know if it was done on purpose or whatnot. When she was giving her speech, or her farewell speech, she lost the page of her notes to speak from. I mean, was that the person who wrote that speech or gave it to her, was he or she in charge of the rollout of the Obamacare thing? That would be my first comment. I'm surprised she lasted this long. And but I think here's the key. To me, it's not that she's resigned or fired or whatever she did. Many administrations heads roll when something goes wrong. So that's gone through every president's since the first president, since Washington. The question for me will be, and this will go back to our beginning with your favorite Comcast mergers with Time Warner, or the Time Warner mergers with Comcast, where will she end up? Now, I bet dollars for donuts she ends up a huge lobbyist for a insurance company, a health HMO or something of that nature. Anybody want to take that bet?
I'm with you.
Okay, and that'll be proof positive that this Obamacare is not consumer-friendly. That'll be that. I mean, it should be. I hope that someday it is, because that's what we need. But it's going to be proof positive with whatever company she ends up with, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Anthem, whatever they're called, whatever it be, she will, you'll know, everyone will get their answers that they thought was happening.
Well, actually, I'm not so convinced she'll become a lobbyist. I think she'll get the golden parachute and join the health equivalent of the FCC or the FDA.
Oh, you think she's going to get a government job? Nah, no way. He can't put her anywhere. She's toxic. So my opinion is, and she's leaving because she's got something lined up. A little sooner than necessary. Like I said, that happens all the time in government. I mean, none of us should be surprised if she ends up in any part of corporate America. It might be Time Warner Comcast, not because they also own a HMO that we're not familiar with. Maybe Bill can let his magic fingers do some dialing and find out what HMO they own, because it's all hidden in corporate secrecy. But she's going to end up on one of those because she's valuable to them. She knows all the ins and outs of the the system that's in place right now. Why wouldn't someone grab her?
Peter, where do you think she's going to go?
Oh, I have no idea where she's going to go. I generally agree that she'll move on to something, and she'll be fine, and she'll take care of herself, and some large corporate entity or some wealthy sector will hire her, because she obviously has skills and has valuable services to provide. That's how she got the post in the first place. And as far as her resignation, well, you know, I guess they needed a political scapegoat. I for one, it never ceases to amaze me how much people seize on what I consider to be small matters, and they lose sight of the big picture. I mean, the complaint about Obamacare seems to be that it had a lot of kinks unrolling. It didn't achieve its target deadlines. Instead of meeting an October deadline, that deadline was months later. And, you know, in the big picture, for me, these things are more or less irrelevant. I mean, we're talking about establishing something that will hopefully provide people with relief for many, many years to come. And people focus, in my opinion, on, you know, compared to the big picture, they focus on small things. But that's just the way the world is, and that's the way people are. And she, quote-unquote, paid a price for it, and, you know, no big deal. Another day in American politics.
And, Bill, I know you're a big fan of Obamacare. what are your thoughts?
Well, again, you could see it coming that they were going to have to make somebody be the fall guy. You know, it's just like Chris Christie. You know, Chris Christie did nothing. He was not involved in the bridge scandal, but then they found someone to take the blame for it so that he could potentially get off the hook.
Okay. That's great comment. Is Chris Christie innocent? Bill, is that's your understanding?
Well, they're declaring him innocent, but, you know, again, like I've said every time it comes up, he's a micromanager. He's involved in everything. Nobody, you know, everyone asks if they can use the toilet before they leave the room. Everyone is given marching orders, and if you don't agree with 100% on what Chris Christie says or believes, then he tells you to just leave. He doesn't want them on his staff, and that's the way it's always been. So I don't think he's innocent. I never believed him innocent. And but you got to find someone to be the fall guy so that you can say, well, it was never proved that I did this. In fact, we got other people to take the blame and leave. So I couldn't have done it, right?
Yay.
Right. he learned from Nixon. Sam, you're a very political animal. Any views on Christie?
He's not going to be he's not going to win the Republican nomination in 2016. He thought he was, but he's not. So, you know, I think because part of it is I think Bill knows him better. You know, because he's one of his subjects. I think that. You know, he ruined himself with that. You know, people want to get away from, you know, they don't want power mad type people or, you know, and that's the way I view it. They want to see someone who would never use their power to punish someone. Like I said, if Christie's that much of a creep that he would shut down the George Washington Bridge because he has to piss off the Democratic, show the Democratic mayor of Fort Lee that he is all-powerful and omnipotent and all-fattening. I don't think that's that person we want, but I do believe knowing his history, and as Bill has pointed out, that's his M.O. That's the way he operates. But I also think a lot of politicians act that way. They're not using their power to help the people. They're using the power to help themselves, period.
I think a lot of people. I think a lot of people act that way. I think a lot of people act that way.
Yeah, sure. Well, people with power. I mean, instead of using their power or their good sense or their whatnot to help their fellow men and women, they're not. They're using it to show that the heel on the, you know, it's the old proverbial heel, the boot on the boot heel on the back of the neck, as opposed to giving a helping hand to help someone up. And we don't live in those times. That, Peter, you've been right. You've been saying this. You've had a theme all day today of, you know, times have changed. We don't live in those sort of times, and we have to adjust to them. And they're pretty negative times right now. And that's sad. I mean, I think all of us realize, you know, hey, it's a bad thing out there. Maybe by talking about this on Sundays, we can help out if we can open up one person's mind. And sometimes you guys open up my mind, not Gary though, to other things and calm me down and make me a better person. Then I'll hopefully be able to pass that on to somebody. And that's what I like about this, you know. And it's good to have discussions because in my day-to-day routine, unless I'm teaching. And I'm at a higher class level, I'm not really getting a lot of good feedback, give and take. You know, it beats the hell out of dealing with drunks and, you know, at the bar. But you know, as far as trying to have a positive impact on people, that's all we can try to do. And we try to do that here on Sundays, and I applaud everybody for participating in it. And, you know, Bill, you could be out in your yard, you know, putting, you know, painted Easter eggs out there for kids to deal with. Peter, you could probably be walking on the beach, listening to, you know, some groovy music, Beach Boys or something.
Groovy
working on a
music,
stage.
That's
Simon,
what I need.
You could be busy trying to overthrow the world from your... from your house. I could be busy, drinking a bottle of wine and working in my yard too, but we're not. We take time out here to do this, and I applaud you for doing that. I'm glad you did. We've become friends, and I just hope that we can influence people to use, if they're in a position of power or in a position to help somebody, regardless of the race, color, creed, sexual origin, political thing, help the person. Don't kick them when they're down. That's the easiest thing in the world to do. Help somebody. That's the tougher thing to do.
Can I just make one more comment just on that order? Do you remember right after 9/11? I mean, you know, I live, you know, very close to New York City, and I was actually had a bird's eye view of actually watching the towers fall from a building that morning. Immediately after 9/11, people were nice. They were less aggressive drivers. They were polite. There was no issues with if a group wanted to pray in a school. It was just never an issue because you were concerned about everyone around you because you knew somebody who lost someone. And if you needed to spend time with them, you were polite in the grocery store. Everything was really nice for about a month and a half after the towers went down, and it slowly became the craziness that it is day to day now. I really miss that time. It was a great 6 weeks after the towers came down, and it shouldn't have to take something like that for us to continue to be like that. But I really miss everyone's politeness and concern for everyone around them as opposed to just themselves.
You remember, Bill, how they treated people? There were Sikhs in the New Jersey, New York area, and they wore, by their culture and religious heritage, Sikhs wear headband. You know, they wear, I don't know, turban or a head covering.
Yes,
and people were beating them up, but because they thought they were terrorists, right around 9/11.
Yes, that was a bad thing too. But
what can we say? People tend to be dominated by group feelings and self-interest, and you know, when they perceive that everyone's been victimized, they come together, but at the same time they can commit the same type of acts of terrorism that they were purporting to, you know, be up in arms against. I mean, it's I agree with you, it's sad that things like that bring us together, but I think the saddest part is that it doesn't last very long, and then it's back to status quo normal, where everybody fighting over how much of the economic pie they can get, and nobody cares about anything but that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think also some things happen, and Bill, you have a great point, and so do you, Peter. If you take that one a little bit step further, I still think we were in a real good mindset as a country when it's up until we got lied to about weapons of mass destruction. My son's in the military, he signed. We all know someone I mean, come on, I think everybody knows someone whose son or daughter was motivated and joined the military service. My son did. A couple of his friends did because of 911. They were in high school at that point. I also, at the same token, know somebody who's come back wounded and or post-traumatic stress, whatever you want to say. And not the same people because the war didn't turn out what it was supposed to be. We were that old thing that we've seen throughout history books, and we all fell for it. We are the beginning of the war. Everyone is charged up and patriotic and nationalistic, and we're going to get those bad guys. And then it took forever to get Bin Laden. The wars were not what they were supposed to be about. It wasn't the happy ending we thought. And then you have this financial crisis that hit in 08 and 09. And I think, to me, those two things, the war not being what it was supposed to be, and the financial meltdown, and also the and Peter brings up the economic pie, which has gotten smaller for most and larger for a little, are the three things why we're in this mindset that you just were talking about, what we're in right now. Just a real, you know, a real survival of the fittest. Charles Darwin would be very happy right now with the way America's going.
Okay. We're running out of time, but there is one last subject I want to bring up. There was an article on Politico that summed it up kind of quite well. President Barack Obama struck hard at restrictive voting rights laws Friday, calling them a Republican political tactic conceived to address a made-up problem, pretending that there's widespread impropriety. He said it is just about keeping Democrats from winning. I love it. I'm not sure it's factual, but it is what it is. Peter, you...
Well, obviously, he's 100% correct. What's the question? I'm not sure what the problem here is. Yeah, of course, obviously.
Right, okay.
Well, look, I mean, I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek, but it's equal parts political propaganda and it's equal parts truth. I mean, the political parties are at war with each other, and they're constantly lambasting each other for various, purportedly political reasons. And I think there's always some element of truth to these charges that people are motivated by various political hatchet jobs. And that doesn't surprise me. That's politics as usual.
And Sam,
I got to agree with Peter. You know, it's the war of the. It's a midterm election. It's a big election coming up. The people are already gearing up for the presidency from both parties. You know, Obama's a lame duck, and you know he's trying to hang on to his. I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same old, same old. Frankly, it's starting to bore the shit out of me. We need a third party badly. One that's a sensible party that takes the best of both and maybe a little bit of something else and comes up and put these out of the way. It's very similar to me in 1856 when we had the Whigs and the Democrats and the Republican Party came out of it in 1856. And a lot of people don't know that. The Republican Party was the original third party. And we need something like that again to happen in this country to capitalize on get people going and to think and maybe change the way some things are going on more sensible ground, because you know the far left and the far right with their oodles of money on both sides, their propaganda machines control everything, and then they throw out red herrings. You know, I think all of us are pretty smart guys and we all know what these red herrings are. The left throws them out, the right throws them out, and I mean it just never ends. And the people fight over it. They argue over it. And meanwhile, behind the people behind the curtain are getting away with everything. And that's what we need to focus on.
Okay, but Sam, you're avoiding the question.
No, I'm not.
No. Did he think that the, the Republicans asking for, everything short from a DNA sample, to have the right to vote is a good move?
In regards to for who I missed, I got lost in my own rhetoric. Which is common. What was the who are they asking it for immigrants?
Well, just life in general.
For the right to vote.
You're right.
One man, one vote. That's the way until the Supreme Court decides that, otherwise, I have to abide by that, whatever the last decision was. You know, one man, one vote. I mean, you can't keep a limit. You can't keep people from voting unless they've, they're not legal citizens. Or Peter, can felons vote in America now? I don't even know. I know that's state by state.
I'm sorry. The question
felons,
is what exactly?
Convicted felons vote by, is that federal law or state law?
That's very interesting. I would assume that if you're incarcerated and you're convicted of a felony, you lose the right to vote. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I would think that that is true. And I don't know what happens upon if you're ever released or paroled. I'm assuming you can get those voting rights back. But I do tend to agree with the argument that these attempts to restrict or control who can vote are really just ways of driving certain voters out of the electorate process, because it's designed to intimidate people who may feel like that this is a deterrent to them to want to vote. So I do believe it has political motivation behind it, and I think that the president's assessment has more correctness to it than incorrectness. But again, maybe I'm just revealing my own political
leaning. Well, come on. This country was founded on not letting people vote. Women couldn't vote.
Sure.
Only whites who owned property were the original voters. Remember that, gang. Talk about the ultimate Jim Crow laws. So Jim Crow's been around forever, and still is. And the Republicans disguise it, the Democrats then try to make it easier with early voting and not having that. I mean, both sides are trying to motivate their base, get the votes out to win their election, that some rich people are going and rich corporations are going to, propagandize us to death. So, yes, the president's right, but his side does it too.
Well, that brings up an interesting thought. I don't know if any of you have ever read the book or seen the movie Starship Troopers. And,
Peter's favorite emails. Okay, go ahead.
You laugh, but I tell you, I thought it was a fascinating book, and I thought it was a pretty well done motion picture, even though most people panned it. But one of the concepts that the author Robert Heinlein was trying to express in that movie, in that book, I should say, is that only certain people in society should have the right to vote, and he suggested in his novel that the only people who should have the right to vote are people who served in the military, because only those people were willing to put their lives on the line for the system. And in his novel, he called such people citizens, and everybody else was a non-citizen. So that's food for thought. Consider to what extent, if any, you agree with that or disagree.
Bill, I want to get your thoughts on this aspect.
I think we're in the same chapter on different pages. I think we're closer than you'd believe. It seems like we're getting to a point of social class distinctions. Just kind of like where I started at the very beginning of the show, that are dividing us. They're looking at the votes now. But one of the things I think that our educational system, and maybe Sam, you can fix this in your new career, is that there isn't enough focus on teaching our young people to get involved in their government, in the laws of the land, because that's, you know, they're worrying about technology and all kinds of other kinds of things, but people aren't getting educated so much on how do you get involved in your government, whether it be local, whether it be you know, national. When they go to the polling places, they say, oh, I got the right to vote and everything, but they don't have a clue what they're voting about. So, you know, I think that's where we've kind of really missed the boat on.
Sam, I think that's a great question.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, you know, one of the problems that I've noticed is if to motivate the kids today, I'm not talking about the younger kids, I'm talking about the kids at the high school level, is if you're trying to educate them with dated material, now I'm going to put dated in quotation marks, you're not going to get to them. I was in an English class, I was substituting for a teacher, and the kids were freaking out because they couldn't stand Huckleberry Finn. Now, for all of us, that's like, wow, you know, I mean, Huck Finn, you know, Mark Twain and all that stuff, it dated. And when I had a hit, and then the next day I was in another community. They had the teacher. I had to teach about the Andrew Jackson battle with the First Bank. And I actually got to the kids because I actually started talking about the Federal Reserve in a little way because that they could relate to. They didn't know about Andrew. They knew a little about Andrew Jackson and this and that, but that they don't know about. But they know about the Fed. They know about Wall Street. They know about Occupy Wall Street. So we're going to do a lively conversation about that. So if we use the history and create synergy with modern events, I think you got a shot at what you're saying, Bill, because when you just sit up there and drone on about history or literary stuff, like Peter, you brought up a great thing. That book, I didn't know it was a book, about giving the right to vote, that would get kids into a lively discussion. Should you only be allowed to vote if you serve in the military? I think that would be a great question to pose to young kids who aren't ready to vote yet or are learning about it. See, that's the type of ways you have to think. And what I've learned today is I'm fired up because it's a new career for me. But I have 40 years outside of the box thinking, I hate to use that cliche, to bring it into the schools, and I think I have a better effect than that. I have seen teachers already in their 40s, who are 14 years younger than I am, a little bit younger. They've been teaching for 20 years. They're burnt out. They got to go.
Well, just remember, Sam, almost every good teaching lesson can begin with a YouTube video of a scene from a movie.
Let me guess what that movie is.
In any movie.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that
you know, one of my favorite topics of discussion is to quote Yoda, and when he says, do or do not, there is no try. Analyze.
Yes, you have to use all that stuff. But there's a lot of teachers who, I mean, you know what they do? I mean, I'm amazed. Come in, substitute teacher, my teacher lesson, put in disc, watch things. They don't do anything. They're burnt out already, and they can be burnt out because, you know, it's like everything else. It's got to change, but you're fighting the status quo. I'm lucky I can do it a little bit way. Hope, you know, my little day-to-day thing, I come in, add a few stuff, add a few jokes. I like the fact that I've written books. I've been out there. I get the kids' attention for a little bit. Because, you know, what it comes down to is, you know, you're thinking about kids. We talk about the social network. They're not even on Facebook anymore because, like me, I went on Facebook. I love it. I'm with Simon. I'm with Peter. Bill, you'd be on it. I connected with all my old friends from high school and college. I've seen how their kids have grown up. So we share stuff. We've had a couple of reunions together because of it. It's been great. On the same token, it pissed off my sons and my daughter who were like, well, Dad will see me in a picture or something. I can't do this. So the kids have gone off Facebook. They're really into Twitter. Now, what I can't stand about Twitter, and Simon will back me on this one, is what the hell can you say, especially me, you guys know me, I can talk forever, in 140 characters?
I'll tell you what you can say.
You really
you
can't
can
say,
say
much, can you?
You can say hashtag.
But that's what they love. And then the other thing is, of course, the apps. And these people, man, these guys, so, you know, their attention spans, and I've been in some inner-city schools, I've been in ed-city schools, and I've been in top-line suburban schools and country schools where the kids, you know, and it's basically the same thing. You've really got to get them, you know, but you can. And it's up to each individual teacher. Mike's thing is what I've seen is the burnt-out teacher at age 40, which is pretty pathetic. But is it, you know, because they're tired of dealing with the, I don't know what the reason is, you know, but they are, and you can tell by what the lesson plans are. They're not looking for new things, and I think that's what the challenge for teachers and educators are across the country, is how do you get these young kids, these young minds, and you've got the tools to do it. You've got to have the want to do it. And I think it's easier to say, let's read Huck Finn. And I'm not saying Huck Finn's a bad book, but maybe in today's world, it isn't, and you should be reading Cider House Rules instead. You know, that just came off the top of my head, okay? You're welcome, John Irving, by the way. but things of that nature, and to attack some different items. I mean, my son-in-law is a teacher, too, in English. He's having a tough time getting the kids to relate to Gatsby. And he finally figured out he had to sit down with them. Why don't you guys? They go, they like the movie, the new one, but they didn't like the book because this is very interesting because he gave a little, a quiz and said, why don't you like, not a quiz, why didn't you like the book? And they all, and Gatsby's one of my favorite novels. It's one of the greatest books ever written. And they all said, when was there a time you couldn't buy beer and wine or liquor?
They didn't like the book because it didn't have pictures.
That's another thing. Don't forget. That's not a bad idea. What books are the highest selling books right now, Simon? Pop fiction. What are they called? Pop novels, right? The Sin City,
manga.
You're talking about comic book novels.
Comic book novels, right?
Manga.
I used to call pop novels. Those are what sell. And like, you know, funny guys, I was talking to Manny. And by the way, if you have a chance, don't forget to wish Manny Balling happy belated birthday, Manny. Okay, we wish you on the show. But Manny was saying he went to see Captain America. I have a hard time believing sitting him there. Captain America's Winter Soldier one, okay? And I was telling Manny, and I was telling some of the students, too. I go, when I was a kid, I loved Marvel Comics. But I would never think in my lifetime Marvel Comics would become the highest grossing movies of today's world. If you would have told me that back 40 years ago, I would have laughed and said, there's no way they're going to put four on the big screen. There's no way Captain America or the Hulk or this or that. I thought the pinnacle, you know, the top of the career for Marvel Comics was the Hulk TV show, which was terrible, with Lou Ferrigno. You know, that was it. But lo and behold, they make these movies. They cost $150 million to make. They gross $150 billion, and everyone's into it. And, hey, you know, that's how things change. And that's what the kids want. The kids like that stuff. And that's how you're going to have to entertain them and educate them. Peter, you're right. They want to see a book with pictures in it. And I don't know how we're going to illustrate I don't know how you illustrate for whom the bell's tolled.
You put it into a video game, an interactive video game. That's how you're going to do it.
Or you're going to watch Starship Troopers with Denise, your favorite scene with Denise Richards.
Well, she wasn't in the shower scene, Sam.
She wasn't, who
sorry
was the girl in the shower scene?
That was Dizzy, played by another one of my favorite actresses, whose name I can't remember right now. But she's
Denise
off-
Richards wasn't in the shower scene? Well, she should have been.
Of course not. Of course.
Okay. I have to call an end to this wonderful discussion, but I want to go round the table. Bill, I'm going to start with you. Any parting thoughts for us?
Well, I really would like for us to get talking more about the educational system, what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. I hope that we can put that onto a show sometime in the near future. I'm sure we all have some good ideas for that. But I would like to part with this, that from Jeff Foxworthy, that we truly have become a country founded by geniuses and run by idiots. But on the positive note, I hope everyone has a great Easter. I will not be on a show. I'm hoping that you're passing on the show just because I cannot attend next week. So how's that?
Know, I would love to do a program on education. It's a subject
near and dear to my heart. Sam, your thoughts?
Well, if on Easter, Bill, I hope you have a great Easter. I would think that maybe we should just talk about the Bible next Sunday and have interesting Bible stories and things of that nature. But, no, I had a great time today. Wonderful interaction. I appreciate it. I'd love to do a show on education. Heck, I don't mind doing a show on Starship Troopers shower scene either, Peter. I'm going to leave you with this note, though. Peter, yesterday, this morning I was reading all my stuff, and Kate Upton wishes her boobs were smaller. And Kate, please keep them as big as they are.
Suffering with those burdens.
Okay, and Peter, your thoughts?
Well, I can't let go of Starship Troopers now. You know, one of the reasons, in my opinion, that that shower scene was in there was because it was depicting a world in the future where everyone was equal. And people were so equal that men and women were equally fighting battles and dying and being soldiers, and they were showering together too, because that was the ultimate form of equality, or one expression of equality. And it bothered me that I couldn't think of the actress's name who played Dizzy, because I think she's awesome, and her name is Dina Meyer. And if Dina's out there listening, call me.
And gentlemen, this has been wonderful. Let's do it again next week. Until then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. Till next time, goodbye.